It's 7:43 on this West Virginia morning. I'm Teresa Wills. The worst form of black lung disease is on the rise in central Appalachia, but today we'll hear about a program that's offering some hope to minors who have the disease.
I noticed he could get up and move around a little bit better. He's not hateful and grouchy like he was. And that makes a better marriage.
We'll hear more about the New Beginnings Pulmonary Rehabilitation coming up. This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. Natural gas production in Pennsylvania climbed in 2018. State Impact Pennsylvania's Amy Sisk reports it's expected to reach a new high by year's end, 6 trillion cubic feet.
Drillers extracted 13% more gas in the first three quarters of 2018 than during the same period the previous year. David Spiegelmeyer with the Marcellus Shale Coalition says the uptick is due in part to efficiency. Operators are drilling longer wells that extend on average for 10,000 feet horizontally underground. Plus, he says, more pipelines such as the Atlantic Sunrise in eastern Pennsylvania are coming online, giving drillers greater ability to get their gas to market.
Not only to get gas to consumers here in Pennsylvania, but to get gas to consumers across our country, and indeed, in some cases, to get gas to consumers across the globe.
Spiegelmeyer says the industry still faces challenges transporting gas to markets like New England because neighboring states have been hesitant to approve new pipelines amid environmental opposition. Amy Sisk, State Impact Pennsylvania.
NPR's Howard Berkus reported this week that more than 2,000 coal miners are now suffering from the most severe form of black lung disease. And despite clear warnings, industry regulators did not stop it. The investigation caps a nearly four-decade career for Berkus, who is retiring from NPR this month. Jeff Young spoke with Berkus about how he reported this story and why his reporting kept taking him back to Appalachia's coal country.
Data loom large in this story. Berkus took a deep dive into 30 years worth of dust monitoring data from coal mines. That analysis revealed that miners were frequently exposed to toxic levels of silica dust from rock. And a review of federal records showed that industry and regulators knew the deadly consequences of that exposure long ago. But the story also draws on old-fashioned shoe leather reporting. Working with the Ohio Valley Resource, Berkus gathered dozens of interviews from sick miners in the area.
I had been determined from the beginning to try to talk to as many coal miners who are suffering from progressive massive fibrosis as possible. We interviewed 34. It's not a scientific survey, but you get a sense then of what the practices were in mines, of what the miners' lives are like by sitting down with them and asking them, what did you experience? What was it like where you worked? Did the coal companies you worked for, did they cheat on dust sampling? But most importantly, what has this done to your life?
Where do you see this story going from here? Reaction from industry, from lawmakers?
You know, I don't know what is likely. I suspect that there will be defensiveness on the part of the Mine Safety Agency. I suspect that, you know, that the mining industry will continue what has been a pattern for them of trying to draw a distinction between black lung caused by coal dust and progressive massive fibrosis caused by silica dust. It seems to me to be a way to try to get out of paying black lung benefits. You know, no one has ever responded to whatever has been reported about what silica does to coal miners. So I don't know whether to expect anything now. It's really sad.
Let's talk a bit about what's on the horizon for you personally. This is kind of your swan song at NPR, right?
I don't know what song swans sing, but yeah, so this is my last big project. I'm retiring. My first day of retirement will be January 1st, and it was January 1st, 38 years ago, that I started as a reporter at NPR.
Wow. So you've done a lot of reporting on a lot of different topics, but you seem repeatedly drawn back to coal country and coal stories. What is it about that topic that draws you back?
You know, that's a, I don't know. I think one thing about it is that I was really struck by the failures of regulators to do what they're required to do. And the consequences of that are really tragic. So that was kind of a shock. I think the other thing is coal is a political football in this country. You have the rhetoric of the war on coal. You have debates about whether coal can be revived. But to me, what's fundamental there is that coal miners still go to work every day. And, you know, like every other worker in America, they deserve to go home healthy and whole and alive every night. So I don't know, maybe that's what drew me to doing these stories.
NPR investigative reporter Howard Berkus. His work isn't quite done yet. Next month, the PBS program Frontline will air a documentary based on his latest reporting. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Jeff Young.
As we've just heard, Central Appalachia is in the midst of an unprecedented epidemic of black lung disease, an illness that afflicts coal miners. There is no cure for black lung, and until recently, treatment options were limited. But as Sydney Bowles reports, one coal miner's daughter is showing that there may be some hope for relief.
Marcy Tate comes from a coal mining family.
My father-in-law was a coal miner. My dad was a coal miner. My grandfather was a coal miner. My great-grandfather was a coal miner.
With all those coal miners around, Tate knew what black lung disease looked like.
The coughing and the mucus and the quality of life decreased.
Tate was working in pharmaceutical sales when she noticed those familiar symptoms. This time, in her father. Miners begin to experience a cough and shortness of breath. Even the smallest tasks become unmanageable. Black lung is incurable, progressive, and deadly. At the time, most black lung patients were given some medication or maybe an inhaler to lessen the pain of the disease. The only treatment known to slow the progression was supplemental oxygen. Tate thought there had to be better treatment options. Luckily, she knew some pulmonologists through work, and she started asking around.
And I said, there's got to be something. You know, there's got to be something else.
Tate found there was something else, something called pulmonary rehabilitation. It turns out she wasn't the only person experimenting with ways to treat a difficult disease. Dr. Akshay Sood is a professor of medicine at the University of New Mexico. He's helping develop a program designed to treat coal miners in rural parts of the Southwest. He says pulmonary rehabilitation involves more than meets the eye.
And involves a combination of upper and lower extremity exercises, breathing exercises, nutrition education, smoking cessation counseling, and general advice on how to live your life with chronic lung diseases.
Tate says it's all about strengthening remaining healthy lung tissue to help miners increase their tolerance for exertion. But for her, rehabilitation is also about improving quality of life. It's about understanding a miner as a unique type of patient who needs unique care. She spent 10 years designing a program that was specific to the needs of miners.
I used my daddy as a guinea pig.
She created a team, got the certifications she needed, and in 2013, she opened her first pulmonary rehab clinic in Norton, Virginia. She called it New Beginnings. Joseph Porter was the clinic's first patient. You can hear his oxygen tank in the background.
So it's been good for me. That's a good program for people like me, black lung patients. And I used to sit around my chair and go to sleep. I don't go to sleep during the day now in there at all.
Another patient, Jack Fortner, is riding a stationary bike in the clinic's equipment room. As you can hear, things can get pretty rowdy in the classroom.
Oh, that's I'm on the bicycle. Calories, the meds. I'm on level one right now because I've not built myself back up.
Fortner's wife, Janie, has been accompanying him to rehab for almost 5 years. She says before New Beginnings, the only thing Fortner did was go to the doctor. But within 2 months,
I noticed he could get up and move around a little bit better. He's not hateful and grouchy like he was. So, and that makes a better marriage.
Fortner isn't alone. Tate says in her clinical trial, patients improved lung function, but they also showed as high as a 60% improvement in quality of life scores. Part of that, Tate says, is that the treatment is a social experience.
These guys come together in groups of eight. just like they did in the coal mines. They're a team again. They're a team of eight. They get really bonded.
Patients get so bonded, she said, that they'll sometimes visit one another in the hospital. These miners will always suffer from black lung. But at least with new beginnings, they're not suffering alone. For the Ohio Valley Resource, I'm Sydney Bowles in Norton, Virginia.
The Ohio Valley Resource is supported by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and West Virginia Public Broadcasting. Health reporter Carol Lofton spent the semester working with fifth graders at Valley Elementary School on a youth reporting project. Today, she has another audio postcard in which we'll hear from six more of those students about how holiday traditions help them feel connected to their families and their communities.
My name is David Gerald. I live in the town of Montgomery, and I'm 11 years old. Every Christmas Eve, we play tricks on each other. Last Christmas Eve, my grandma wrapped a gift card in plaster and duct tape, and it took me a really long time to get unwrapped. These are my favorite traditions because we get to have laughs and spend a lot of fun times with each other.
I'm Quay McGee, and I'm from Ponto, West Virginia. My favorite Christmas tradition is dinner because the juicy ham and all the other fine food my mom and my mom make. It's quite special because most of my family come to one house and get all the food and meet up and meet everyone.
My name is JC Wiseman, and I am 11 years old. Since my dad works every Christmas, on Christmas morning, we wake up at 7 o'clock, open our presents, and eat breakfast together before he goes to work at around 7:45. Later that day, after my dad gets off work at 4 o'clock, we go to my grandma's house and eat dinner together and open presents with my whole family.
My name is Aubrey Riston. I'm 10 years old. Every year, my aunt hosts a Christmas party. My aunt decorates with a little manger and baby Jesus. The kids get to open presents and eat dinner, and then we go outside to visit all of her animals.
My name is Katie Hill. I am 11 years old, and I live in Edina Village, West Virginia. On Christmas Eve night, we always go to my sister's room, and we read the Polar Express book before we watch the Polar Express. My favorite tradition is we wake up in the middle of the night and we open presents and then go back to bed. And then the next morning we get ready and go to my aunt's house for dinner and to open their presents.
My name is Braden Arthur. I'm 10 years old and I live in Camden Holler. My favorite tradition is going to my mama's every Christmas Eve, and we open presents and we eat dinner and everybody's there and we just have a good time.
You just heard from fifth graders at Valley Elementary School who participated in a youth reporting project with Appalachia Health News Coordinator Carol Lofton. Appalachia Health News is a project of West Virginia Public Broadcasting with support from Marshall Health, Charleston Area Medical Center, and WVU Medicine. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.